At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Well, welcome back to the Table Talk podcast. We are excited today to talk to you all about postpartum nutrient depletions. And so we're going to get a little bit into our prenatals and what we should be having as far as nutrients during pregnancy and sort of how to address some of these things before, if you can. But if you're listening to this after, we'll talk about how we address it when you actually do have some of those nutrient depletions. So I have with me today two of our pharmacists. So ladies, why don't you introduce yourselves? They've both been on the podcast before, but Jessica, if you want to start.
Yes. Hello. I'm Jess Orlowski. I'm a pharmacist in Pennsylvania. I co-own a pharmacy and we incorporate functional medicine and health and wellness into our pharmacy. And postnatal depletion is a huge thing that I work with a lot of clients for, because my advice to women postpartum is, no matter when you had your baby, you're postpartum, whether it's 6 months, 6 years, 16 years. And this is a super important podcast I think any mom should listen to.
Awesome. Thank you. And Veronica?
Hi, I'm Veronica Riera-Gilley. I'm a pharmacist in Sherman, Texas, and I'm a geriatric specialist. But this topic is really important to me because what we do now and what we do for our kids sets us up for healthy aging. We are not destined by our genes, but the choices that we make can help keep our good genes turned on and give us the best expression of the genes that we do have. So this is a great topic to be talking about, because how we eat and what we do matters for our longevity and our quality of life.
Awesome. Yeah, we can get a little bit deeper into that in a few minutes. So Jessica, why don't you start us out with, like, how did we get here? What are the nutrients that our body needs more of in pregnancy? We're all moms. Each of us has had kids. I think you've had the most children because you had two at once for one of those pregnancies, but we've each had two pregnancies. And so what goes on during that pregnancy and what some of these nutrients that our body's more rapidly going through?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, when we make a baby, It's two. And actually, when I was pregnant with twins, they told me to supplement extra than just a prenatal vitamin. And at the time, I kind of, you know, wasn't in this field and it was a crazy pill burden. And I did not do it the whole pregnancy. Plus two, if you're nauseous, you know, sometimes that prenatal is just not sitting well with you. So basically, when our bodies make a baby, they need all of these nutrients and vitamins to build their bones, their nervous system, everything. And if you are not taking in these nutrients, they're going to find it somewhere. And we're going to talk a little more later about omega fatty acids and choline. And basically, like, if you're not eating them, that baby's going to find it somewhere. So postnatal depletions is really big. You know, when you are postpartum, you have hormone fluctuations and you might have some anxiety or hair loss, and everybody's just like, oh, that's normal. That comes with postpartum. Don't worry about it. But sometimes if those symptoms, say, are different than a previous pregnancy, that you're like, this isn't normal, I don't feel right, even low energy, they can all be actually nutrient depletion. So big ones, usually it's like iron. So you could have some form of anemia, and B vitamins and omega fatty acids. Vitamin A is also a big one. We have pretty much all the B vitamins. Folate also. So, you know, folic acid is a big, we know everybody hears about folic acid with pregnancy. My advice to women looking for a prenatal is to try to look for like a methyl folate. It's the better absorbed folic acid, because some of us do have like a genetic variation that we don't absorb it appropriately. It is hard to actually find that form over the counter. So do your homework on your prenatal vitamins. And iron, B vitamins, zinc, magnesium, they're big players in postnatal depletions and also like the symptoms that you might be experiencing as far as hair loss, anxiety, plus two, sometimes like thyroid function that can fluctuate pretty quickly postpartum. And so those are some, based on when I see a patient, based on their symptoms postpartum, those are usually like the big players that I go to help replete those nutrients. And when you, especially too, if you're having multiple pregnancies, especially within 2 years of each other, a lot of times that doesn't give you enough time to replete these nutrients. So sometimes, you know, like your first pregnancy might've been a breeze. Your tank was full of nutrients before you had that baby. And then you have the baby, life happens, you adjust as a mother, maybe you're a working mom, or even a stay-at-home mom is just as demanding for a working mother. And you may not take care of yourself as well as you did prior to having kids. And so sometimes your wellness and your health gets put on the back burner. You get pregnant again. And so you're kind of starting off behind the eight ball. And especially too, if it's a closer pregnancy, you may have not had the time to replenish those nutrients. There is a book that is actually called Postnatal Depletion Cure. And it's by Dr. Oscar Sarilac. I always pronounce his last name wrong, but it was actually published by Goop, Gwyneth Paltrow's company, which we will talk about an article later, that they have a really great article on postnatal depletion. And his book is written for patients to kind of read it themselves, kind of go through. He has like quizzes and questions like, are you feeling this way? Maybe it's related to zinc. Maybe it's related to magnesium deficiency. And he comes up with a plan to help you replete all of those things. So he does recommend supplementation for a certain period of time, but the good news is it won't be forever. And his big thing is focusing on sleep. So yes, you're going to be waking up in the middle of the night and everything with a baby. But if you prioritize sleep within a year, hopefully then the baby's sleeping through the night. And then at that year mark, you can really nourish your body and get back to like deep sleep after a year to help restore and heal and replenish your body for the long term.
Yeah. Yeah. And back to the folate thing for a minute, natural folates can be a good option too, as like a food-based prenatal vitamin, because there's a lot of people out there that do have MTHFR mutations, which is that genetic piece that Jessica was talking about, as far as people that don't convert it as well. So depending on if they have one copy of that mutation or two copies of the mutation could depend on how well they are converting their folate. But for me, I also have a COMT mutation, which is a little bit further down. And so when I take a lot of methylated folate, I feel terrible. I feel really tired. I feel really agitated. So sometimes like the amounts that are in prenatals and some of these awesome products are like a little too much for some people. So really just like learning your body and trying things out. And a lot of people that have MTHFR are fine, but it just depends on if you have that plus other mutations. So certainly, you know, if you're really gung-ho and want to do a little deep dive into your genetics before starting a regimen, you know, prenatal product, if you're trying to conceive, doing a Nutra genomic evaluation could be a cool place to start. Veronica, did you want to say anything else about the folate?
The food-based vitamin is a great option. If you don't have a pharmacy near you that's carrying one of these really high quality prenatal vitamins with the methylated B vitamins, so a food-based vitamin is going to make sure that you have the right type of folate that's already activated, and you don't have to worry about whether or not you know your MTHFR status, that you're getting a good product. And I didn't know I had two copies of MTHFR when I was pregnant with either of my boys, and I used a food-based vitamin, and even that may not have been quite enough. I did have healthy pregnancies, but my boys have a sacral dimple that indicates that the body had a really hard time closing that neural tube. So I'm very grateful that even though I didn't have that knowledge at the time, that I was using something that helped us have successful pregnancies, and neither of my boys have neural tube defects.
My twins have that too, but my husband has it also. So, you know, I never had my genes tested, but I'm always curious. You should never feel guilty that you didn't do enough or, you know, like just learning this now, don't feel guilty. Maybe I could have taken a little more. Maybe I do have the genetic mutation. I don't know, but my pregnancies were healthy. My babies are healthy, and just educate yourself from here on out.
Yeah, for sure. I think the other nutrient that we can also talk a little bit more about is choline. And so recently, the guidelines have changed to how much choline that is recommended by the OBGYN societies. And used to, it wasn't really included as like a must-have nutrient, but now they actually recommend 450 milligrams a day of choline. And a lot of the prenatals, they don't actually have that much, especially even some of the quality companies that, you know, one that I took during pregnancy doesn't have 450 milligrams. Certainly you can get some from diet. So the things that are really high in choline are like your eggs. One egg is about 147 milligrams. So if you need the 450, you're going to be eating quite a few eggs each day. And then most of the choline is actually in the yolk. So you could even just have the yolk and not as many of the egg whites. But some people, if they eat too many eggs, it can be create an allergenic process if your gut isn't healthy. We might want to be careful about loading up on so many eggs, but I love just like the egg yolk part. So if you just want to do the yolks, that's great. Like Jessica said, some people are nauseous during pregnancies, food aversions, all kinds of things. So you might need a prenatal that has enough choline if you're unable to do that, or if you're not eating eggs for some reason. Because the other options with high amounts of choline are organ meats like liver and kidneys, caviar, fish, and there are some in mushrooms. So a cup of shiitake mushrooms is actually also 100 milligrams of choline. So that could be an option, especially for those who are leaning more towards vegetarian type things. Soy does have some choline. Again, can be another one of those allergy type triggers. So we have to be careful with too much. And we want to make sure soy is non-GMO and organic. And then beef has some choline as well. So making sure if you are eating meats that you know, a 3-ounce serving does have about 150 milligrams, about 15 milligrams. So if you're eating, you know, some eggs for breakfast, some beef for dinner, some chicken and turkey also has some choline, you can probably get to the 450 milligrams pretty easily. But certainly if you are supplementing, there's a pretty high level of tolerance for more choline if you're getting it from the diet and supplementation. So that's really important. Although it's widely distributed in the diet, choline is absent from most prenatal vitamins. And so less than 10% of pregnant women actually achieve their target intake levels. And the reason why we need so much choline during fetal development is that the choline actually is supporting that rapid cell division, growth, and like myelination in the brain tissue. And really the choline-derived neurotransmitters, acetylcholine, influence so many processes in the developing brain. So all the different cells growing and doing their thing, migrating, creating the synapses in the brain, choline is like the number one nutrient there. So the development of the hippocampus in particular, which is a region of the brain with like memory, learning, attention. It's a major source of methyl groups as well. So choline, we talked about methylation. It also facilitates that methylation process. So really important nutrient that we really want to make sure people are thinking about when they're in. Again, some vegetables, cruciferous vegetables, have like 25 milligrams per 100 grams. So there's still some choline even in some of those other nutrients. So definitely important to get from diet. And then let's talk omega-3s a little bit. So key nutrients identified to have normal brain function in offspring are the fatty acids. So we've talked about omega-3 fatty acids a lot, but EPA and DHA specifically. And we know we've talked already about, you know, your appetite changes during pregnancy. Salmon smelled, I don't know about you guys, but I could not handle the fish during, especially my second pregnancy. Like I was like, this is terrible. I would stomach it to eat it like once a week or so, but that pan in the sink overnight, just like the smell, like soaking to get, you know, when you're trying to clean off the parts of the skin stuck on there and it's sitting overnight, I would come down in the morning, I'm like, oh, this is, I'm going to throw up, even though I hardly never had like actual morning sickness other than nausea. Sometimes you're just like, I am not eating this right now. And so those omega-3s, the fish is really like the highest amount of omega-3s in our diet. We can certainly get some from flax and olive oil and things like that. But it's interesting, like the connection when we talk about the postnatal piece. So certainly omega-3s are helpful in our patients that are pregnant because they also affect the offspring. So like Veronica was talking about, what we do during pregnancy affects our offspring. So there's studies that patients that mom had more DHA and EPA on actually had less atopic disease or allergy type conditions. So asthma, allergies, atopic dermatitis, those eczema type things were less common in kids when mom had adequate levels of omega-3s. And from a mom standpoint, though, when we're talking about this postnatal depletion, there's actually been some studies that there's been more risk of postpartum depression with patients that are having issues with low omega-3 fatty acids, low B12, low folate, iron, and things have been linked to those major depressive symptoms and nutrient depleted moms. So really important, not just for baby, to make sure that those are part of our nutrition plan or supplementation plan in pregnancy, but also important for that postpartum period, especially if you are someone that maybe leans more towards the seasonal affective disorder or major depressive disorder. A nutrient evaluation even before you become pregnant would be awesome. But if we're on the other side experiencing those symptoms, definitely looking at those nutrients in our diet and digging deeper into like the levels. And we can actually test your red blood cell levels of a lot of these nutrients and look at the cellular level and see where those are. And then sometimes things like iron and ferritin, we can easily test in the blood and look at stores of that. So anything else you guys want to say about those nutrients?
I want to add about the omega fatty acids and choline. Kind of like I mentioned before, if you're not taking them in, that baby's going to find it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And just like you mentioned, like we need to give the growing fetus omega fatty acids to help support their brain health and form those neurons and the myelination of their brain and their nerve cells. So if we're not taking them in, this sounds so barbaric and almost like parasitic, but the baby is actually taking it from our brain. So we lose our kind of brain health.
Mom brain, right?
Like, yep, exactly. It's like Melody said, it can increase the risk of postpartum depression, but that mom brain, fog brain, you know, like you forget things super easily. You walk into the other room and you forgot what you're doing, or you forget what you're doing the next day as you wake up in the morning. So that baby brain, mom brain could be a need for the mother to supplement postpartum omega fatty acids and choline.
Yeah. And I'll say, I mean, I say this all the time, like I've never tested someone that lives in the United States with omega-3s that's not supplementing and found they had adequate stores of omega-3s or adequate ratios of omega-3 to omega-6s, just because the standard American diet has so many omega-6s from those inflammatory oils and just really not enough omega-3s in our diet. So regardless of if you're postpartum or not, that's going to be really important. Let's talk about some of the other macronutrients that are important. So Veronica, I know you wanted to mention a little bit about protein.
Yes, protein is really important in our postpartum period, especially if we're healing from a C-section, because we need those building blocks to repair our tissues. And we already know that we mentioned many of the meat products have the choline that we need, but it also has these amino acids, which are those building blocks for healthy tissues.
Yeah.
And many people hear that a plant-based diet is really good. That's one of the diets that's getting a lot of attention right now, is a vegan diet. And changing your diet to become vegan during pregnancy or even postpartum may not be the best idea. There are vegans that have healthy pregnancies and are healthy postpartum, but it usually requires some supplementation since it's harder to get your B vitamins, and you have to be thoughtful about pairing your foods to get complete proteins, since not all the plants are complete sources of proteins, meaning that they have all of the essential amino acids. There are some amino acids that we can't make, so we have to get them from our diet. And an example of a complete plant protein would be soy or quinoa. Those have all of the essential amino acids that we need.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think working with a registered dietitian too can be really helpful, or a certified nutrition specialist, because figuring out how much protein you need is going to be influenced by if you're breastfeeding postpartum or if you are exercising a lot postpartum, and all of those pieces of your diet and lifestyle are going to factor into how much protein you need, because, you know, making milk will lead into that a little bit with like, what are the other really important nutrient dense foods to have when you're breastfeeding?
Protein and fats, I would say also too, from a personal standpoint, I exclusively pumped and bottle fed the twins. And oh, so it's like, I couldn't imagine. I give major kudos to anybody that physically breastfed twins, but so I would pump and bottle feed them. And so I would notice changes in an increase in output with high protein and high fats. So like protein, fats, and hydration were like the big things that really helped lactation. And like Veronica said, protein will help with your healing postpartum. And if you also had a C-section, zinc is a good one too, to help with cellular repair.
Yeah, that's a good point. And along with that, I mean, I think when you're breastfeeding, like not pulling out any major food group macro is really important, because carbs make a difference too, because insulin is involved in the stimulation of prolactin and lactation. And if you're going low carb, all of a sudden, like a lot of times supply really tanks if you don't have that piece there. There's even some connection between like PCOS patients and like oversupply. So I think making sure that you've got a well-rounded diet when it comes to macros is going to be really key. I know so many people that are lactating are like, oh my goodness, I want the weight off. I want the weight off, you know, from pregnancy. And they want to do these things that are restrictive a little bit. But honestly, even if you do restrict those nutrients, your body's job during lactation, your brain's like telling your body that needs to save and store these nutrients. And so a lot of times until you're done nursing, that doesn't go away. And when you're done nursing, it's like, oh, okay, well, I can lose this weight now. I'm not feeding someone else. So there's just like this part of our physiology and that is doing its job there. So don't get frustrated if, you know, you get that initial weight loss from having the baby and the fluid, you know, starts to decrease and then you're just like stuck for a year, because that's really like what's supposed to happen.
A lot of women can experience weight loss during lactation because it's using so many calories from your own body to nourish the baby. So it's really important that you get an extra 500 calories per day, roughly, to make sure that you're not going to be depleted yourself. That's a great way to make sure that you're not being depleted yourself, as if you can get 500 extra good quality calories.
Yeah. I don't know a lot of people that actually experience weight loss during lactation, but
I did with,
I did,
I think
did.
With the twins. Yeah. And like, I did eat enough recovered. And stuff like that. But then when I was done breastfeeding, I never cut my calories, and that's when I gained weight. I was actually lost weight easily while I was breastfeeding, but then I never stopped eating as much.
Yeah. The challenge too, I think in that period from a weight loss standpoint, is the stress component and the cortisol component, the lack of sleep piece, in addition to the fact that your body's like, hey, we need to store some of these calories for making milk. So it might depend on too your predisposition to metabolic conditions and the insulin piece and all of that, and cortisol dysregulations too. But my kids were not good sleepers, so I was up a lot. So that could make a big difference. But all right. So we'll talk a little bit about some of these symptoms here of postpartum or postnatal nutrient depletion. Fatigue and exhaustion can certainly be symptoms, being tired when you wake up and not feeling like you can get going. Hypervigilance is a good one. And that really is this feeling that like you're just constantly is having anxiety or this unease, feeling tired, but wired. So like you can't go to sleep is how some people describe it. And then some of those symptoms of the postpartum depression could be like loss of your self-esteem, isolation. I mean, during this time you're at home a lot. Like I didn't want to leave my house with my first, I mean, I didn't necessarily have postpartum depression, but it's like, you don't feel good. You're like covered in breast milk. Like, you're just like, I'm just going to hang out here in my jammies for 3 months or 2 months before I went back to work. And really like loss of libido, certainly that can be partially triggered by the hormone changes. And then the brain fog or baby brain, like we talked about, but so much of this is multifactorial. It's not just the nutrient depletions. It's the stress, like we mentioned, the hormone changes, the brain structure changes. And also like the fact that we're having babies later in life than maybe our past generations. So I think about this all the time when I see women that are like in their early 20s or late 20s that are having babies and they're just like bounced back and like feel great. And then you see women in their 30s having babies and they're like, oh my goodness, I feel like a train hit me. But part of it is just like, we're more nutrient depleted by the time we get to that age. The standard American diet over time contributes to that. The social schedules and our sleep deprivation, as far as like so many more working moms than there used to be, not that you're not sleep deprivation deprived if you're at home too, but there's just a lot more societal demands, whether you're at home or going to the office, that really causes us to not to be able to recover. And part of that in the US is the fact that we only have this 6 to 8 weeks to recover. And in reality, some countries give you a year to recover before you go back to work. And so that's certainly, all of that is going to exacerbate the nutrient depletion piece, because stress, and we talk about stress every podcast. So here it is, we're talking about stress, and it is, you know, causing the cortisol changes, causing the gut to not secrete the right enzymes to break down your food, which can lead, stress on its own can lead to dysbiosis and changes in your gut microbiome. So there's just so much there that's contributing to why, not just that the baby took all these nutrients from you and now you're feeding the baby in a different way, but the fact that all this stress is impacting our, it also impacts maybe our choices too, when we're so busy and we're like, oh my goodness, I'm exhausted. When you're nursing, I've never been so hungry in my life. When I don't know about you guys, but pregnancy, I was like, yeah, this is fine, I'm not that hungry. But nursing, I was like, holy moly, I need to eat a lot more food. So all of this is, you know, really important to really taking time for recovery. I think there's a really good point that the blog post that we can link here that Jessica mentioned before, but they were talking about the multi-generational aspect. And I have had friends that came from countries in Africa and China and things like that. And they like respect so much more like the generational piece, and the older generations are actually like taking care of baby for like a month. So mom, like my, one of my neighbors, her family, like she was like not allowed to get out of bed for like a month, because I mean, she did get out of bed, but like her mom like was there and taking care of the baby and helping with everything. And she was really like able to rest and recover. And in most of our cases, that isn't the case. Like a lot of us don't live right near our parents. Our parents may be still working when we have kids, especially if you're having kids in your 20s, most likely your parents are still working. I live in an area where there's an Air Force base. A lot of people are here. Their families aren't anywhere close. So it's really challenging, I think. I don't know about your guys' experience with that, but there's not that same level of support that maybe our previous generations might have had.
I agree with that, that there's not the multi-generational support that people previously had. And there's a need for a postpartum doula. And there is such a thing. I don't know if our listeners have heard of this, but just like there are birth doulas to help you with that process of bringing this new baby into the world, but then there's a postpartum doula who is there to support you like a family member would if you don't have one. They come to your house and they change diapers and do laundry and help you with lactation and nursing the baby. And it's a really great thing to look into if you don't have someone who can come and stay with you for a few weeks immediately postpartum. I'm really lucky. My mother is a neonatal nurse and a lactation consultant, and she stayed with me for 2 weeks after each of my children were born. And it was the biggest help. And she taught my husband what to do when she was gone. And she said, you have that baby changed and dry diaper before you wake her for the baby to nurse. Let her sleep as much as possible. And that was a huge help to have someone tell us what to do, because you think it's intuitive when you have a baby, and some of it isn't. And nursing a baby, it seems like it should be natural and easy, and it takes time, and you've got to find your groove and use a lactation consultant to help you with latch and any challenge that you're having. And I'm going to throw in there, get your kids adjusted, find a good chiropractor, because that helps with nursing and latch too. Or if they're having any acid reflux or regurgitation issues, chiropractic.
Yeah. Or an OMT, a provider that provides osteopathic manipulation. So we done both of those with our kids. I mean, it's just amazing. Like, especially because they're all curled up in this ball, and you know, Jessica's got two of them and they're all curled up. And so they need like their bodies sort of relaxed out and unwound a little bit. Sometimes there can be a huge difference in the reflux piece when they actually do have those adjustments.
And in the book, the postnatal depletion cure book, he uses this term that's like so beautiful. It's called matrescence. It's kind of like, if you think of like pubescence, like puberty is a phase that you go through getting older. And then this is a phase that you go through becoming a mother, because literally our brains are completely rewired when we have babies for like, you know, it makes us more protective and more intuitive to like the baby's needs and smells and everything like that. So, you know, you have to also honor that. I was very like, oh, well, when I have a baby, nothing's going to change. And I was super, you know, like tried to push myself to get back really quickly to doing everything I did prior. And I was able to do that with one baby. But then when I had two, it was a lot harder. And then I had like three under the age of two. So that was even more. And I really do encourage, you know, to look up this doctor. He is in Australia, but he has since COVID, because it's kind of lifted a little bit, he does retreats with mothers and he does a lot of free webinars and Zooms, which is really great. And he talks all about like the scientific and like the physiological changes that happens within our bodies. And he is big on, like Veronica said, that first, those first like 4 weeks, if you can try to sleep as like much as possible, and that, you know, everybody says sleep when the baby's sleeping, and you should, you know, everything can wait.
What if just nurture your body and sleep?
Well, then, so I also made that mistake a lot too, is I would, you know, like, I know that they're supposed to take a 2 hour nap. So I'm going to do something for the first hour and then sleep for the second hour. And every time I would lay my head on that pillow, they would wake up. So as soon as you put them down, try to fall asleep yourself too. Get, even if it's 15 minutes.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Honestly, that's why we don't have a third child, is because of how terrible they slept. I think that the help piece, I remember we had friends, we had hosted a small group for our church. It was actually called a house church in our home, like leading up to having our first child. And I just remember my friends like coming over and they would hold my daughter because she had reflux, and I ended up figuring out food allergies and some things that were causing it. But my friend was like studying for her nurse practitioner boards, like with her notes here, just holding my baby for like 4 hours while I slept that initial like 4 hours of the night, and then nursed her again and went back to sleep. But just those people in your life, that community. And I think that's one of the reasons, I mean, we talk about community a lot as like a pillar of health, but it's not just like, because, you know, there's lots of endorphins and things that happen when you're engaged with people, but just for those times in life too, like I can't even imagine like without her and like another friend that was a mom of like five, but she was a little bit more our parents' age, a little bit younger than our parents, but she would come over and hold her and just let us sleep for a while. And so if you're in that stage of life where you need some baby fixes, find those people that need your help and just holding those babies. And I think COVID has made that a little bit harder, because I know a lot of my friends that have had babies more recently, it's like, okay, my kids are sick. I feel like I can't go sit and hold this baby. And they're like worried about their baby coming down with something. And so it makes that a little bit more challenging, but do what you can to really offer support to those new moms. All right. Well, anything else that we want to add in here to our discussion?
I guess one thing I'd like to add, you know, we're talking all like postpartum, you know, like what to do after, but some things that you can do to help support yourself and your body and set you up for success, like I mentioned earlier, is kind of refilling your tank. So a big thing is, you know, if you are planning on getting pregnant again, or you are that type of person that you try to plan it out exactly, give yourself like 3 to 12 months to really focus on your nutrition and your nutrients. And that'll also, not only will it help fill your stores up, it helps with egg health. And the egg you get pregnant with develops 3 months before your body releases it during ovulation. So those 3 months of nutrients and omega fatty acids are really great to help also too, like Veronica mentioned, you know, yes, like your genes are not your destiny. So by giving your body the right tools helps to give you the healthiest expression of genes.
Right. Yeah. There's some studies even like with people that have such a short window between kids, like that you're obviously you're more at risk for nutrient depletion, but then, you know, kids even might not have more risk for some of those allergic conditions as well.
There's a book. It's a really big book. It's but called Deep Nutrition. Mm-hmm. They talk about the, I don't know if they has any, it's called like the second child syndrome, where if kids are really close in age, sometimes like even the bone structures of the second child aren't as developed or full as the first child. And, you know, there's argument. It could just be like genetics. Like they just maybe look like a different parent or have a different face size, but sometimes like the jaws, or they're not as tall. I mean, is it attributed to depletions in the mother?
That'd be interesting. My sister, my second sister is younger or tall, shorter, excuse me, than me. But my dad's mom was shorter and she looks the most like her out of all of us. So I don't know, you know, is it the genetics or is it the nutrients piece? Yeah. Veronica is itching to talk about placenta encapsulation, which is sort of a controversial topic. So Veronica, tell us what it is and how it benefited you. Cause I think you did it.
I did. Placenta encapsulation is the practice of ingesting the placenta after birth. And it sounds strange to us, but it's something that happens in the animal kingdom. All mammals eat the placenta, and part of it is to restore their nutrients. The placenta is the organ that supports the baby. And after the baby is born, the baby no longer needs the placenta. And it's full of hormones that maintain the pregnancy. And we can use that to help balance our hormones if we're ingesting it. And so animals in the wild do this. And they think that it's because it also protects the baby, because then there's not the scent of a recent birth hanging around in the environment. But then they're also getting all those hormones back into their body to help balance it. And then there's a lot of iron that's in that placenta. And so it's able to help with nutrient depletions. And we know when we give birth, we do lose a lot of blood and therefore lose a lot of iron. So this is a practice that people can use to help support their bodies in the postpartum period. And there's different ways that people go about ingesting their placenta. Some people will take small pieces of it and blend it up in a smoothie and drink it throughout several months. They'll store it in the freezer. Other people will steam it and dehydrate it and pack it in a capsule. And this is the most common method that we see. And this is the one that is practiced in traditional Chinese medicine. And this is the method that I recommend if anyone is choosing to do placenta encapsulation, because it involves steaming the placenta, and that heat treatment of the placenta will kill any pathogens that may have come in contact with it. Hospital births, as good as we try to do in the hospital with having clean, there's just scary germs at the hospital. And I think if you have a hospital birth, that it's too risky to try the raw placenta.
Yeah.
Professional opinion.
Yeah. Even with the home birth though, you're like group B strep potential and things like that could be, you know, there too.
So in the traditional Chinese method, you steam it. You also use some herbs that help support the body. Ginger, black pepper, and serrano pepper are some of the herbs that they can put in the water to steam it. And then you slice it thin, dehydrate it low in the oven, and then grind it up and pack it in capsules. And you can take it, all of the capsules immediately postpartum, several capsules every day until they're gone, or you can save them. There are some people that will save these for their menopausal period to help balance their hormones in that part of their life. And then if they don't use all the capsules, you can have a little ceremony of leaving that childbearing years of your life. And I actually encapsulated my own placenta because I have those skills as a pharmacist, and it's something that I really wanted to do. And I found that it made a huge difference with my milk supply and also with my mood and my ability to focus postpartum. Made a big difference. And it's hard to say if it did as much as I think it did, because it was my second baby. So I had a lot more experience, a lot more know-how, and I also had a different work environment. I had significantly less stress postpartum with my second baby, just by nature of having a different job. So there were a lot of factors that went into it, but I had a surplus of milk, which I never had with my first one. In fact, we had a freezer failure and lost 4 liters of milk. And when he was done nursing, I had replenished all that, and we still had milk in the freezer when he was 2 years old. So awesome. I feel like it made a really big difference. And if people are interested in this practice, I would recommend looking for a doula who offers this service, so that you're not trying to figure out how to safely handle your placenta postpartum. Let someone else do it for you. I don't recommend in that 48-hour period postpartum that you try and tackle this yourself.
Yeah, for sure. we have another pharmacist on our team that did hers and had a good experience as well. I did not have a very positive experience with it. I did do it with my second after learning all this stuff with my first. I had no idea about all this. I will say with the hospital birth, I had a hospital birth with like a birthing center that had a tub. And so I was able to labor naturally, but I was still in the hospital. And it was my redemption birth because my first daughter's birth, we could talk about for hours how traumatic that was. But anyways, but the hospital does have sort of some policies, things you have to sign off on. It has to go to like a specific department. And then that's where it like can be picked up by whoever is encapsulating it. So I'm going to be just the devil's advocate a little bit so we can give you both sides of the story. But as far as the risk, there certainly is a risk for infection. So certainly making sure whoever you are trusting your placenta with is doing what Veronica said and refrigerating properly up until the part where it's processed and is using that heat to kill any potential bacteria. There can be exposure to some heavy metals in the placenta. So depending on, because this like builds up over time. So depending on what your exposures to that during pregnancy were or what's in your body, like that could be a potential issue. And while some women do experience the increase in supply, some women do experience decreased supply, potentially theoretically because of the progesterone that's left over in the placenta could inhibit the production of prolactin. So again, like I think there's a lot of different experiences out there. And then during, like, there is, you know, a warning in this about higher risk of developing blood clots in the early weeks given birth. And because it's containing hormones, like maybe that could exacerbate that. Again, it's going to depend very much on the person, how much hormones left in there, like all of those cases. I have not heard any specific cases of that happening, but again, theoretical things that might be something to consider. But my experience was that I was so tired after I took those. So I don't know if there was some kind of toxin in mine or if the high amounts of B vitamins, because I said that happens to me with like high methylated Bs, was causing an issue for me. But like, as soon as I stopped taking it, I was like fine and I could like function. So two sides of this is everything. But I think, you know, a lot of people do experience really positive benefits of that. Jessica, did you do that at all?
I did not. We thought about it for the second pregnancy, but we chose not to.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things to consider and a lot of research to do about that topic. So Veronica, if you have any good resources that we can post in the show notes regarding placenta encapsulation, we'd love to post those for people to check it out more.
Yeah. Dr. Aviva Ram wrote a great book about postpartum care. And that's where I got a lot of my information about how to do it. But I also paid for a consult with a doula to tell me how she did it. So I got a lot of information from someone who's done hundreds of placentas and then read that book by Dr. Aviva Ram and decided to do it myself.
Okay. Awesome. Well, yeah, we probably need to wrap up. This has been a long discussion about postnatal. There's a lot that we can do from the functional medicine standpoint. I know a lot of times women don't want to reach out because they feel like they need to get past the breastfeeding in order to really like take care of their health. But really, like during this time, we may not be able to give certain herbs or certain supplements that we might give once someone's done breastfeeding, just because we don't have a lot of data. But certainly the nutrient piece is like really important. And so some of those lifestyle things we talk about from a functional medicine standpoint, as far as our stress reduction things, our nutrition, our sleep, and all of that, plus replenishing those nutrients in that postpartum period are so important. So again, you can find us at farmtotable, PharmToTable.life, farmtotable.life. And we hope to see you there soon. And we will be back with more conversation on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.